You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. From May 14th through June 8th, 1968, future Hall of Fame Dodgers pitcher Don Drysdale did not give up a run over six consecutive starts, 54 innings. He was at 58 and two-thirds, breaking Walter Johnson's record of 56, when a sacrifice fly by a Philadelphia outfielder ended the streak. It would be broken 20 years later by Oral Hershiser. Our guest was the 1965 National League Rookie of the Year, and he saw it all from second base behind Drysdale. And we're so happy to welcome to the show Jim LaFever. Jim, it's great to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Ed. It's good to hear your voice again.
And yours, too. 1968, Jim, was the year of the pitcher. Crazy things were happening. Denny McClain would win 31 games, the first pitcher to win 30 games since Dizzy Dean back in 1934. Bob Gibson with a 1.12 earned run average and somehow nine losses. Louis Tiant, 1.60 earned run average. And your guy, Drysdale, it was a really tough year for the hitters.
Sure was. In fact, it became so tough that they had to lower the mound to make it more fair for the hitters. I mean, the mounds were higher, and when Drysdale threw his, the scoreless innings record, broke it, I was involved in that. I was also involved when Bob Gibson challenged that almost to the last day. In fact, both of them matched up in Dodger Stadium. It was a great one of the biggest things that I was around. Was that Bob Gibson was in a position to break Don Drysdale's record. Well, Don and Gibson matched up that day. Don got knocked out in the first inning. They got about four or five runs off him real quick, so that took care of that. So he know that Gibson comes out in the first inning, and he goes out, he gets bases loaded, and a pass ball goes by the catcher, and his record was broken. So within a matter of two innings, the Cardinals had about a seven-run lead, and the inning streaks were both gone. And so it was very anticlimactic at that time. But, when Drysdale had his record, we were playing against, I think it was the Giants, and there was a ground ball that went to first base but was called back because the ball had hit the catcher at first. And they called it a interference. They had to redo it over again, and then he got him out to hit a double play, and he got out of the inning. So it was kind of a weird way in which – the way it ended up, let's put it that way.
Yeah. During this time of the consecutive shutouts, he beat some pretty good guys, Jim. He beat Fergie Jenkins and Bob Gibson, who we just talked about.
Yeah, they were. I mean, anybody gets any kind of streak going like that in the big leagues is at least recognized. You know, they say, oh, it's, got a good streak going. Yeah, Ferguson Jenkins was, with the Cubs, and he was top of the league and one of the top guys. And, of course, Drysdale, we all know about him. Yeah, do something like that is really incredible when they get into, 20, 30 innings and people start paying attention. By that time, there's a lot of good baseball, defensive baseball, that was played behind them at the same time.
And that's what I was going to ask you about. Do you remember any great plays along the way that stood out?
I really don't, Ed. I wish I could give you an answer like that. All we knew is that every time he went on the mound, after we got to about 20, middle of the 20s, where people started to realize, hey, this is a special type. We just went out there every day to play the best baseball we could. We had Sandy Koufax, Don Drysdale, Claude Osteen. We had a really good starting pitching staff that most of those guys, they completed their games. And so after about three or four games, they started to realize they haven't anybody got – score puts a lot of pressure on the defense. And, when you have an innings like that, you get in that kind of role, their stuff doesn't really get any better. It doesn't like they have go on to a different level as far as their fastball or breaking ball. It's just that they start making the pitches that are necessary to get people out inning after inning after inning, pitch after pitch after pitch. And there were times where a lot of balls were hit hard. We made good plays behind him. There was a lot of times that when they weren't hit hard, we still made good plays behind him, top balls or whatever it may be. It's just everything comes together at the right time. You don't necessarily get better stuff. It just comes together at the right time.
You said about 20 innings into it, that's when you guys started to begin to realize that Drysdale may be onto something here. He shuts out the Cubs. And then the Astros, and then the Cardinals with bad weather in St. Louis. And you bring up a very important point, Jim, and that's about the pressure on the guys behind them once the ball is put in play, because there's something extraordinary going on here.
Well, absolutely, Ed. And, you know, we were used to that in Dodgers because we never were a great offensive team. We were conditioned and trained the Dodger way. You know, Walter Alston and the way the teams were put together is solid defense, great pitching, and, you know, great defense makes average pitching staffs really good. And then you have pitchers like Don Drysdale and Koufax. They have the great arms. Now back it up with great defense. You got Hall of Famers. So even the guys, Sandy Koufax used to kid around about, you know, Willie Davis used to save a lot of games for us because he'd run down all his mistakes. You know, like a double in the gap, they'd run him down, they'd turn into outs. So we took a lot of pride in the fact that we played good defense. Then when it starts to add up, you know, 20 innings, 25, 30 innings, pressure goes on the defense to make those routine plays and to be in the right spot at the right time. And again, it's not that the pitcher just suddenly got better, you know, by everything. It's just that they started making the right pitches. And, you know, I was talking to, you know, listening to Joe Madden over there in Chicago about Arrieta, you know, about his pitching. He said, you know, Jake isn't doing anything different. He's always had a great arm, but he started making the pitches that he needed to do to become a winning pitcher, and he's just taking it to a different level, you know?
Of course he does, and you're absolutely right about that. He's making the pitches. Now, Drysdale has already shut out the Cubs, the Astros, the Cardinals, and the Astros again. When you host the Giants, and he's up 2-0 in the seventh inning, but the Giants have the bases loaded, nobody out, and catcher Dick Dietz is at the plate. And
that's
the
right.
Count goes to 2-2. Drysdale throws a slider that doesn't slide, and it grazes Dietz on the left elbow. And that's when home plate umpire Harry Windelstedt, the father of the current umpire Hunter Windelstedt, went to work. That was an amazing moment during the streak.
Oh, big time. I mean, hit him, and we go, oh, my God. You know, we never thought. I didn't see Dick Dietz lean into the ball. I really didn't. You know, when you see a breaking ball, we call it a backup breaking ball, and you try to throw the ball to a certain spot, and it slips out of your hand incorrectly, and it goes the other way. So here you are looking at the ball, thinking it's going to be away, and all at once it just comes inside, and it clipped him, you know? And so we all go, oh, man, it's over. You know what I mean? And all what Harry Winslow said, no, you leaned in and got hit by the ball. Well, he actually did, but he didn't deliver it. Drysdale's throwing 98 miles an hour with a nasty, hard fastball that's running in on you. Dick was a right-hand hitter. You're not going to stick your head out there or your arm. You break your arm. But he did, and he called him back and said, nope, that's not right. It's whatever the call was, the ball. And then next thing you know, the next pitch, he throws it. They hit a double play. Got it. We got out of the inning. You know how things just worked in your way. The calls went our way. Everything, we made the plays when we had to. And that's how you know, when you throw shutouts to the big leagues, that's how you do it.
It was crazy. He made him stay at home plate. The count goes to 3-2. According to the account we had, Dietz flies out to short left. The runners cannot advance. The next ball is hit to Wes Parker at first base. He throws home for the second out, and there's a pop-up, and the streak is still intact until the next game. Then he shuts out the Pittsburgh Pirates, and then comes the moment when the streak ends on a sacrifice fly by Philadelphia outfielder Howie Bedell. It was an amazing moment. Let me ask you this, Jim. What made Don Drysdale so good?
He had great stuff. Let's face that. Threw hard, really heavy, hard sinker. And if you're right-handed hitting against him, he came in there and threw it in there. If it hits you, that's part of the game. He had no fear of going inside on guys. But the biggest thing is he was a fierce competitor. A fierce competitor. He never felt that he was out of the inning any way whatsoever when a player went up there. He didn't care. He just went after you the best he could to get you out. And that streak, that's exactly what he did. He got the outs when we needed to. But the big thing was he was a fierce competitor. Every pitch meant something to him. And even when he got on the mound, he always looked for to have pickoffs, to throw pick guys off. He said, I'd rather pick a guy off than have to pitch to a guy like Hank Aaron or so like that, you know. And so he thought about the whole game. It's about the whole game. And you have to beat the lineup, not just one individual. He beat the whole lineup. That was Kopech's theory. You got to beat a lineup. You got to know who you can throw to, who you can't, and stuff like that. And that's why those guys were really great. They never gave in to hitters, and they had the great stuff to back it up, and they made the pitches when you needed to, and we made the plays behind them because we knew how we're going to have to defend them. So it was a combination of a lot of things.
Jim Lefevre is with us, a former Major League manager and the National League's 1965 Rookie of the Year. He was behind Don Drysdale as Drysdale was throwing 58 and two-thirds consecutive shutout innings, which ended in the fifth inning on June 8, 1968, with a fly ball to left center field, a sacrifice fly. Mickey Mantle once told me, Jim, that the Dodgers were playing the Yankees in Fort Lauderdale many, many years ago, and the Dodgers get off the bus from Vero Beach, and the Dodger team is walking past the Yankee dugout, and Drysdale smiles and sees Mickey. He goes, "Hey, Mick, how you doing today?" And then Jimmy goes, "Mickey, where do you want it today? You want it here, pointing to his shoulder, or you want it here, pointing to his hips?" And that was the kind of guy he was. Of course, he was kidding. It was spring training, but that was his reputation.
That's exactly right. Like I said, he was going to pitch a certain style. And he's going to tell you, "I'm going in." Of course, Mickey Mantle's a switch hitter, but that was just a joke. But he said, "You know, if I'm going in there, I'm going to go in there with all authority. You're not going to aim it in there." And then he'd say, "You know, if you knock one of our guys down, I'm going to knock two of your guys down. And I ain't going to pick out the third-string catcher or a backup guy in the bottom of the lineup. I'm going after your superstars." And everybody knew that. He was just a competitor. And he went in there hard. He didn't go in there to hurt him. He didn't go in there to hit him, by all means, but to let him know that I'm not afraid to go in there. And so every once in a while, a ball would get loose, and that's what happened. And they knew that if he sensed on the other side of the field that they knocked one of our guys down because of that, then he would knock their guys down. Nobody had to tell him what to do. Nobody was no written law what you had to do. He took it upon himself. That's the kind of guy he was. So there was always that sense of fear when you faced him. I remember one time I was in batting practice in Vero Beach. He was throwing to me, and this is my second year. And so he threw a BP, and I hit about two balls out in batting practice. Next ball, he knocks me down in batting practice. And he's laughing on the bat. He's, "Hey, Fritchie, don't get too hot on me." I mean, he couldn't even take it in batting practice. That's the kind of competitor he was. So anyway, you know, you really enjoy those guys because they were great players, great competitors, and great winners. And when they walked to the mound, you better pay attention to detail, because if you didn't, you'd have to face them when you go to our dugout, and he's standing there. You know, why weren't you there? Whatever it may be. So they were really into the game. When that game started, I mean, it's all about focus and concentration. They joke a lot before they get in there, but when they cross those white lines, it changed a lot.
It was all business. And the pressure on the pitching staff back then in Los Angeles was immense because, as you said, you didn't score a lot of runs. And there's an old story, I don't know if it's true or if it's apocryphal, that Maury Wills would get on base. He would steal second. Jim Gilliam would move him to third, hitting to the right side. And then Willie Davis or Tommy Davis would hit a sacrifice fly, and somebody would go up to Kovacs on the bench and go, "Well, there you go. You got your run." And that was that. Go out
and
protect it.
That's the way we felt.
Yeah.
And that was our offense. Our goal was to score first. And why not do it in the first inning? I mean, Maury Wills became a masterful bunter as well. He could slap the ball to riders, you know, through the ball to the infield. Stole the base. Everybody knew he was going to steal. That's what made everything so amazing. Junior Gilliam, God, he was such a professional player. He'd wait until the count when he got the second base, and then I don't care if there's two strikes or not, he hit the ground ball to second, he'd go to third base, and Tommy Davis was the guy. And Tommy Davis would get a base hit up the middle or a sacrifice fly. We had 1-0. What else do you need? What else do you need, guys? Let's go. That was their attitude. That's the way they played the game. That was their – and it builds right into your defense. That's exactly how we felt. We took on the attitude of our pitcher and what kind of competitor he was, and we had to uphold that. So that's exactly what happened.
It was pitching and defense, and the Los Angeles Dodgers of that vintage were Exhibit A. What about this, Jim? Drysdale has this amazing run, 58 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings, and because of the team's inability to score runs consistently, he finishes with a record that season of 14 wins and 12 losses and a 2.15 earned run average. You talk about a deceiving record.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've heard that a lot of times about win and losses. And, you know, that doesn't really mean anything. But when you pitch a great game like that and lose, it takes a lot. That was our one chance to get another win in the win column. So that's exactly right. The record does not really exemplify what kind of year he had. You know, we didn't score a lot of – don't forget, there was a lot of players that were left, you know, on the team. Sandy had already left by then. A couple other guys, the pitching staff was not as deep. And so Don – just took it upon himself that he had to go out there and complete every game. And, you know, consequently, it doesn't really work that way. You just got to go out there. Yeah, he lost a little stuff too as well. But when he got it in that record mode, you know, where he's going, oh my God, he just turned up another level like you wouldn't believe. Again, making pitches. Yeah, just making pitches.
And unfortunately, out of the game after just one more season, after 1969, prematurely at the age of 33 because of injuries. Last question. Can anybody break Hershiser's record of 59 consecutive scoreless, Jim, at a time in which the ballparks have never been smaller, the pitchers are throwing harder than ever before, or is this a record you think that's going to last for all time?
You know, I think it's going to always be challenged. Whether it's going to be broken or not, time will tell. Nobody thought it was going to ever be broken until Oral Hershiser came along. And today, pitchers are throwing harder than ever. Sliders are throwing faster than the top velocity guys back in our days. The pitching has improved power-wise so fast. And the strikeouts, I mean, it's just amazing how teams are accepting strikeouts. And when you go out there and you strike out 10, 12, 13 guys a game, I mean, you're only playing a six-inning game because everybody else struck out prior to that. You know, it's easy said than done. But when you can get strikeouts versus balls hit, you're obviously going to have a better chance of having games, better games than as far as your record's concerned. So I don't know. I don't know if it's ever going to be there, but you know how baseball is. It's always going to be challenged. And nobody's going to start the season by saying, I'm going to go out there and have to break the record for the winless innings. That's just something you never think about until you get in position to suddenly say, you know what, I might have a shot at this. And it's like hitting 400. How many times we see guys have really good starts? Man, do you think you can hit 400? Well, I don't know. And then after about a couple months and you're still up there, then you start trying to hit 400. Never works.
No, it never does work. I am so happy to have you on the show. Thanks so much, Jim. All best wishes to you. I want to have you back at some time in the future to talk about all the great work you're doing for Major League Baseball all around the world. Thank you so much for your kindness.
You're more than happy. Thank you, Ed. Good to hear your voice.
And yours too. So that'll do it for Jim LaFever and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks for the ride, and thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.